Introduction for a Friday afternoon, but it's a nice one. Welcome to it. Hi, Suzanne Desotel here. Dan Delmar sitting in for Rick, and we say good afternoon on at 1 o'clock on a Friday, every Friday, to Carmi Levy. He's our tech journalist and analyst as well with Yahoo Canada. Hi, Carmi.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. I'm very, very excited.
About what?
The MacBook Pro. Because, I'm in the market. Right, for a laptop. So now I'm getting down. I'm down to the wire. I'm trying to decide. So lay it on me. Is this the book for me?
Well, yeah, if your pockets are deep enough, it sure is.
It's quite
likely the best laptop on the market, but also with some of the most precious prices on them. And in typical Canadian, if you're the average Canadian, likely it'll go from about $2,400 up if you tick all the boxes. $3,000, even more, isn't hard
wow.
to believe. This is one gold-plated machine.
Is it worth it? What's in there that makes it so special?
Well, first of all, it's got what's called the Retina screen. And if you got the latest iPhone or iPad, you're familiar with this. Basically, what it means is it's super high resolution. So you can put it right up to your face and look closely enough, and you can't even see the little dots that make up the letters and the graphics, which really means clearer pictures, much more detail. Text is much easier to read because it's very, very crisp. And resolution is everything in video. The more, the better. It coming to the MacBook is huge. News if you are a photographer, if you work in any kind of creative industry, if you do video work, for those people who have very high-end professional needs, this is now the machine to get, likely because of that screen and because all the circuitry that supports it is now the best that Apple makes. It's incredibly, incredibly powerful.
Are there any Apple laptops that aren't $3,000?
Yes, there are. Thankfully, the more everyday machines, the regular MacBook Pros and the MacBook Airs, they're the ones that sell for between $1,000 and $1,500 or a little bit more, those got a bit of a bump, too. So they don't have the Retina screen, but they did get bigger hard drives, bigger solid-state drives for the MacBook Airs. So they don't even have a hard drive. They just have basically solid-state memory, which is much faster, much quieter, much more reliable, more memory, just kind of more of the same. So if you're in the market for just a regular-priced Mac, and that was your budget, you're now going to get more for your money now than you would have just even a couple of weeks ago.
Carmi, let me ask you a Amish question. In something
sure.
like the AirBook or something like that, can you still put in CDs or
no,
DVDs into it?
No, you can't. And that's Apple has had this ongoing war with what's called optical or spinning media for a number of years, and they've slowly been dropping the drives from their machines. Basically, what Apple wants you to do, it wants you to use USB, or it wants you to download everything through
iTunes. Yeah.
So essentially the CD, the DVD, forget it. You're either hoovering it in some electronically, or you're not using it at all. They will sell you an external drive, an external DVD drive that does play and burn DVDs and CDs if you want to. So it kind of gives you the option that even if you have a MacBook Air at home, or you can just take this little thing with you, you still have the opportunity to use discs if you want it. But, really the future of spinning media and Apple devices, not so good.
Oh,
not a fan of that.
I guess I'm going
to
still stick with
didn't
the...
You crush your dreams there, Suzanne.
Well, I'll go back to the Hewlett-Packard like you suggested a while back. Now, this is something I've downloaded on iTunes.
Really? You like Radiohead?
Oh, yeah.
All the depressed kids in high school used to like Radiohead. I was never into it.
It is Radiohead, and they happen to be in town. That is Creep. They're in town tonight at the Bell Center. So in case you're seeing all the trucks down around town, it's always amazing when a new group comes in, how much equipment comes in with them. I mean, the whole area is blocked off with these huge semis, 10, 15, 30 trucks at a time. It's amazing. Joining us right now, we're talking tech this afternoon, as usual, on a Friday with Carmi Levy. And Carmi just scared me with the price of the MacBook Pro, anywhere up to $25,000 to $3,000 here in Canada. Because I was reading it, Carmi, it said $21,000, but I guess that was a U.S. price.
Yeah, Americans always get their Macs for a couple hundred dollars less than they ultimately sell for here. But
that's so crazy with the dollar.
Especially when it's so close to par, it's depressing. But I get asked this a lot. They go, oh, it's cheaper in the U.S. Should I buy it there? You really do have to think twice though, because if that computer on which you're going to base, you're being a student or your business, if that goes south, you may not have warranty coverage, or you may have to bring it back to the U.S. in order to get it repaired. And then of course, the $50 or $100 you might have saved on buying it there suddenly isn't such a great saving after all.
Really?
Uh huh.
So those warranties aren't universal.
Not always. Some companies they are, some companies they aren't. You've got to double check beforehand and make sure that it's in writing. Don't just have someone tell you, oh, sure, you can bring it to a Canadian outlet or something. Make absolutely certain that it will be supported in Canada. And if it isn't, and it's an electronic device that could leave you high and dry for something like work, think very, very carefully before you try to save a few bucks south of the border.
Good advice, Carmi. Yeah. Speaking of tech devices living as high and dry, there's this high-tech umbrella that's come out. Now, tell us about that, a very weird concept.
Yeah, well, of course, what we would read about this the week that the umbrella that I had blew away in a storm and turned inside out. So I'm in the market for a new umbrella, and this is exactly like I totally want this. It's an umbrella that has a built-in solar panel. So you open it up, and there's solar panels on the top. And then you can also plug in your smartphone or another device, and there's a little place on the handle to hold it. So that while you're walking, either in the rain or you can even hold it up in the sun, we always want to protect ourselves from UV rays, it will charge your device as you're out and about. And if you get a call, that little cradle supports hands-free. So just imagine walking down the road, you're speaking hands-free on your speakerphone while your phone is being charged, and of course everybody on the street's looking at you a little bit funny.
Like you're crazy. But wait a second. Solar panels on an umbrella, uh-huh. But if it's raining, it's not taking in the sun, so therefore that's not going to be charging all that well.
But here's the cool thing about solar charging is we tend to think of solar as only when the sun is out, but in reality, even when the clouds are out, there's a lot of UV rays that are coming through the clouds, and in fact, you can still charge, not as efficiently, of course, it'll still be a little bit lower because there's less solar energy, but there's enough there to charge devices. So rain or shine, get those photovoltaics out and charge your stuff, and it's neat to see more devices starting to sprout these things. We've seen them. You can walk into any big box store these days, and usually there's at least one or two knapsacks now that'll have solar panels built in. And in fact, when I've got to replace my backpack for my laptop and electronics, I'm seriously considering going for something like that because, let's face it, we've all been out and about, and we've all run out of juice and wish we had an alternative.
Now, this story is out of the UK, which makes sense because it rains all the time there. Another story, a scarier story out of the UK, is Britain implementing a mass surveillance plan. Now, we know they're big on CCTV, on video taping all other citizens, but they're going to go a bit further, right, Carmi?
Yeah, basically what they're doing is they're planning on giving government agencies, law enforcement, carte blanche to require internet service providers and wireless providers to gather information on the stuff that we do online. So when we go on the internet with our laptop or when we surf or talk on our smartphones or tablets, your service provider is going to be required to keep tabs and keep records of the traffic that you've generated so that in case you do
goodness
bad,
gracious
law enforcement can ask them. It is scary, and this is, you know, today it's the UK, but I need to mention that this is also happening in Canada. There's legislation on the Hill in the House of Commons now being debated about granting similar rights to service providers here in Canada, where they basically would indemnify internet service providers to gather that information for them to help law enforcement. So this Big Brother state started in Canada. The U.S. is talking about it as well. Now we see the U.K. is going there. And basically it's a sign that, what George Orwell wrote about in 1984, very slowly starting to come true.
Sure, this is why Anonymous isn't a big fan of Vic Taves, our public security minister. He wants to spy on everybody.
That's right. But at the same time, we sort of have to think, on whose side are we on here? And the second, on the one hand, we don't want the government spying on us. But on the other hand, if we ourselves get hacked, we want the police to be able to do something about it. So they have to have the tools. They have to have the ability. I'm certainly not defending carte blanche access. But at the same time, I think we've got to, this isn't necessarily a black and white thing. It's very much a gray thing. Because the police, up until now, have been very hampered because the legislation that's in place doesn't really make it easy for them to go after groups like Anonymous who would do negative things. So legislation like this, even though, yes, it does open up the door for potential abuse, it also gives the police a little bit more ability to go after people who would do us harm online. So we sort of have to look at this from two sides.
Now, the government, the only one that wants to spy on your online activities, Facebook wants to do it too.
And joining us this afternoon is Carmi Levy. We're talking tech. We're finding out about MacBook Pro, the new one that's just come out. We're hearing about high-tech umbrellas. Britain has decided that they're going to go into the emails and text messages and know everything about you on following in Canada's footsteps, but now we've got Facebook wanting to get in on everything that we're doing as well by now going into our browsing history. Is that right, Carmi?
Oh, you got it. They're calling it Facebook Exchange. And where this comes from is, as we know, the company went public last month, and that didn't go so well. Because you know, the stock price is just way down since then. And part of that is because the company doesn't make enough money for investors' tastes from advertising. So it's trying to make more. And so what it's doing is called Facebook Exchange. And basically what it'll do is it'll make the ads that we see on the Facebook page as we use Facebook more relevant to us. So let's use the example. Suzanne, you're in the market for a computer. You're looking for a MacBook Pro. So if you go online and you're just Googling MacBook Pro or Apple or, you know, Apple laptop, what'll happen is the way it works is, as we surf the internet, sites that are part of this Facebook Exchange program, they drop a little piece of code on your computer, and it's called a cookie. And basically what it is it just says, okay, you know, Suzanne went to this site and she looked for MacBook Pro. And so then when you go back to the Facebook page, it's going to look at that cookie. It'll sort of reach into your computer and read that cookie and say, ah, she's looking for MacBook Pro. So I'm going to serve up an ad very specific to the things that she's interested in. And so then the ad that pops up on Facebook isn't going to be some generic ad for something that you're not interested in. It's going to be for precisely what you're looking for. Now, that's good because now it's relevant, but it's bad because while you are
serving... They're in my computer.
Exactly.
That's not cool.
These big brothers are looking. Now, of course, you can always opt out of it as a user. You have to know how to do that. And that's always been, we know that's been Facebook's bugaboo. They've had problems with privacy in the past. So you can choose to opt in or opt out. But really what it means is advertisers are saying, we want to offer up more relevant ads. In order to do that, we need to know more about users. And Facebook is saying, sure, here you go.
But you know what, Carmi? They're not the only ones that do that. If I go to, like, the New York Post, when I start reading things, all of a sudden the ads start cropping up, and that I know that it's because it's where I've been searching other things online.
Exactly. Everyone's criticizing Facebook for moving in this direction, but you know, Google really has been at the forefront of this, and New York Post is one of their partners. They work with some of their advertisers in order to be part of this program, so that they know it's like, okay, you know, when I go back to Google, did you visit the New York Post site? Yes. What did you do there? How can I make the experience more relevant for you? So as users, we sort of have to recognize that, again, this isn't one of those black and white issues. It's very much a gray. We have to. There's a balance between how much information we're willing to give up in exchange for having more relevant, customized, and focused online experiences. And again, your level of comfort may be different than someone else's. There isn't sort of one right level for everyone else. And so what's important going forward here is that Facebook allows people to opt in and opt out as deeply or as easily as they want, so they don't have like a one-size-fits-all, because one size, as we know, never fits all.